There was a lot of hype surrounding the total solar eclipse. For months, we talked about the eclipse like it was going to be this awe-inspiring and totally unique celestial event. And for once, the hype was justified. All over Northeast Ohio, locals and the region's visitors experienced a total solar eclipse, whether at a park, a ball game, a wedding, or from the comfort of their front lawn. We thought it was incredible. We want to hear what you think. Welcome to The Sound of Ideas. I'm Jenny Hamill. This hour, we'll hear from our own reporters who are out in the community watching the eclipse with other locals and visitors, and we'll hope you'll call in with your experience. Later in the show, we'll talk to representatives from the LGBTQ Center of Cleveland, Birthing Beautiful Communities, and other groups who receive large donations from Mackenzie Scott, philanthropist and ex-wife of Amazon founder Jeff Bezos. All those conversations are coming up. It's The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Through our glasses, we watched as the moon slowly eclipsed the sun. And then for a few moments, the air got cold, the skies fell dark, and it was incredible. Our next chance to collectively celebrate a celestial event won't occur in this state for another 75 years. That's when the next total solar eclipse in Ohio will occur in 2099. But Northeast Ohio, our region, won't be in the path of totality again until the year 2444. That's according to the Cleveland Museum of Natural History. So for our region, that was it. But it wasn't just locals that looked to the skies. There were thousands who made the trek in from other states to share in this experience. Yesterday, our reporters were all around the region, embedded in festivities happening across the region, from viewings put on by museums to baseball fans catching the eclipse from the Guardians home opener, and even eclipse weddings in Akron, as IdeaStream's Anna Huntsman reported.
About 2 hours before the eclipse, Kylie Thanissou walked down the aisle among a small group of friends and family at Cascade Locks Park in Akron. Kylie and her new husband, Timothy Bryan, won a contest through the Akron Municipal Court to be married on the day of the eclipse.
You know, instead of fireworks at the end of our wedding, we're going to have a phenomenal sky show. So it's cool. Just out of this world.
She says they wanted a courthouse wedding, and the eclipse is symbolic of their 13-year relationship.
Like the moon, we went through different phases together, and you know, now we're in harmony.
Another couple, Tony and Ryan Arcee of Cuyahoga Falls, also won the contest. Anna Huntsman, IdeaStream Public Media.
Well, our congratulations to Kylie and Timothy, and what an auspicious wedding day for you to have. And this eclipse was all many of us could talk about for months, and now that it's happened, let's recap. Let's have a chat about what it felt like to be a part of this totally rare event. And with me to do that, and to talk about yesterday's festivities, are two of IdeaStream's reporters, Abigail Botar and Zaria Johnson. Welcome to both of you in the studio, and thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good morning.
All right, Zaria, you were in the Avon Lake, which was the epicenter of the Path of Totality.
Yes, yes.
And Abigail was talking to eclipse chasers at Portage Lake State Park. So I'm excited to have a chat with you about that.
Yeah.
And we want to hear from our listeners. We would love to hear your eclipse viewing experience. What was it like? Who were you with? If you'd like to join the conversation, call 866-578-0903. Once again, 866-578-0903. You can email us at soi@ideastream.org or tweet us. We're at Sound of Ideas. Okay. Zaria or Abigail, had either of you ever experienced a total solar eclipse before?
No, never total. Mm-hmm. I think in 2017, I saw the partial from my high school.
Same.
Okay.
Also from high school.
And prior to the show starting, Abigail was kind of, you know, there was a lot of hype and it went on for a long time. And there were a lot of plans made at our station.
Right.
And so for you, were you kind of anticipating what it was going to be, or just a little bit over it already, and then surprise, because it was mind-blowing, right?
Yes, it was incredible. I was a little over it because the partial eclipse, I just remember not being that, like, blown away by it. Like, it's very cool, the science behind it. I was very interested in learning about it, but it wasn't, like, the life shattering moment. And then like, there's just so much lead up to this and we were doing so much prep, which is like, was great. And people were so excited about it all day, talking to people who had been to eclipses before and they were just hyping it up so much. So I was a little bit like, oh, is this going to live up to these very high expectations? And then as it happened, it did. It was amazing. I was just totally like struck in awe for like seconds, like just standing there soaking it in. And I'm very glad I got to experience it. It was so cool.
And Zaria, I want to hear about the atmosphere, but first, just your own experience. I had asked and ask now, was there any sense of like communing with nature and and beyond nature, something almost celestial when you experience totality?
It was so cool. Like similarly to Abigail, like when I saw the partial eclipse in 2017, like they didn't cancel school for it. So I was like in my high school hallway, like looking out a window, like very much like caged in almost. But being outside yesterday with all these people who were so excited about it and seeing totality for the first time, it was just like so like breathtaking. And even though there was a lot going on with the reporting and all that that we had to do, to get content for the newscasts and for our jobs, like it was just like a moment where all of that melted away and it was just me, the sun and the moon just like vibing together, and it was amazing. I loved it.
It was truly incredible. I was with my family. My mom and stepdad had flown in from California, and we were all there, and my four-year-old with his glasses, and it just felt very special experiencing this thing together. Let's hear from Judy calling in from Old Brooklyn. Judy, how was your total solar eclipse experience?
Hello, thank you. I walked up to Lowe Field in Old Brooklyn with my husband and a friend, and it was so fun being with, it's a huge field, people scattered all over the place, and it was just fun to be in the neighborhood experiencing it. And one experience I had that I did not expect was tears came to my eyes, and it was just so intense. I didn't really expect that. And the words I had was wonder, joy, awe. It was wonderful.
That's wonderful to hear. Do you think it'll stay with you throughout your life? Just kind of this uniquely powerful moment.
Yes. It was a religious experience for me. My friend started singing this song. It's called Canticle of the Sun, and it's about the wonder of God's creation. And so every time we sing that song at church, it will bring back the experience to me.
I love that. And Judy, thanks so much for calling in this morning and being a part of our recap. Okay, so I want to ask Zaria, you were in kind of the dead heart of the center of the path of totality. Mm-hmm. What was the atmosphere like in Avon Lake?
The atmosphere was amazing. Like, everyone was just so excited and happy. Like, I don't know if I've covered an event yet where everyone's mood was just so positive and uplifted. It was just so much excitement. There was so much going on in Avon Lake. So people were, before the eclipse, very spread out between a lot of the different events they had there going on. And some were already on the field, just relaxing, preparing. There were people already in the bleacher, like, claiming their space so they could make sure they got their view.
Sure.
But by the time, you know, we were getting close to eclipse time and before the totality hit, like everyone was on the field from what I could see, or were trying to find secluded little corners with their family to enjoy it together, or were on the bleachers, and it just got so quiet. And then once totality hit, cheers. Like, it was just so much excitement. And then once totality started to move on, cheers again. It was just so, it felt so energized and exciting. I'm so grateful that I got to be there. It was an amazing experience.
And Abigail, what was the atmosphere like in Portage Lake State Park?
Very similar. I will say the one thing I was surprised by is, maybe it was my skepticism about the eclipse, but I thought these would just be local people. These will be people driving from Akron, from Summit County. I only spoke to two people from Ohio. Most everyone was from Massachusetts, Maryland, West Virginia, Michigan, all across, you know, kind of the Northeast area that were like, Ohio is the closest place we could come. And I just loved also how much people were enjoying Ohio. Like, so many people made a trip, a weekend out of it, were staying for a couple days. I talked to a family that toured some colleges in Cleveland.
I love that.
Yes. Like, some people went to the Hall of Fame in Canton. Like, just such a great mix of people. And I just loved hearing hearing how much people loved our region. They were like, wow, I've never been here before. Ohio's great. I loved Cleveland. We got to watch, went to a cool sports bar and watched the game. I had such a great time. So it was also just a great joy and celebration of Ohio, mm-hmm. which I loved. And just such an appreciation of each other. There was such a great community. Like, a lot of the Eclipse Chasers were like going and talking to each other,
sure.
and making friends and bonds. And there was also like a tent set up. I think it was the Ohio Department of Natural Resources and the state parks had a tent set up with like helpful information and kind of like figures to show kids what the eclipse is. And
sure.
people really liked the education. Like, adults were coming in and out and saying, oh, I learned so much in
sure.
there. So it was just such a like such a beautiful day. I mean, reporting can be kind of hard sometimes. So this was like a beautiful, like, uplifting moment where it was just such a positive, optimistic day. And I think that was kind of the takeaway that most everyone there was having.
Let's invite in Jason, who's calling from Cleveland this morning, who had an experience with kids regarding the eclipse that he wanted to share with us. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Jenny. Yeah, I'm a school bus driver. So, you know, luckily for me, both my schools were closed yesterday. So, I got to, you know, stay home, sit in my backyard, my patio, watch the eclipse and everything. And so, of course, you know, first day of school back from spring break and all that, I'm asking both my kids, you know, what did they think of it? And, you know, they were all in awe just seeing it become dark in the middle of the day, the cold, you know, how the temperature dropped, the whole nine mm-hmm. yards. And so, of course, one of the things I loved explaining to them was just how lucky they were to see it happen. You know, I was telling them, what, you know, where the next one would be, how it's going to be far away, and or if you want one here, it's going to be years from now, but when all of us are long gone.
That's right.
So it was like, it was nice to, you know, give them the feel of, like, you don't know how lucky you are. You got to see this with your own eyes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's such an immense experience, and it's something so bigger than all of us that I'm with you, Jason, on kind of how do you distill that for a younger child and say, like, yeah, it was as special as you thought it was. So, Jason, I appreciate you calling in.
My niece and nephew, they're like one and two, and even they were in awe of it when they were seeing it.
Great. Well, Jason, I appreciate you calling in, and thanks for toting all those kids around to school safely. So, yeah, thanks for calling in. Let's go to Eric from Akron. I'd love to hear your experience. Eric, go ahead.
Good morning. Good morning. I wanted to point something out that it's kind of piggybacking on what everybody else is pointing out. But one thing that I heard was music, and that music was an irrefutable, unequivocal joy. Regardless of what you believe in or your religious beliefs, one thing that is undeniable as of yesterday was we are a part of something really big. And proof of that was the minute it hit a total eclipse, everybody, just go back and listen to whatever audio recordings that you have. Everybody was screaming and cheering, and it was pure joy. For one moment, humanity was in joy. In joy. That's what I experienced.
Eric, that is a great point. It was indeed a unifier. So again, I watched with my family on our front lawn, and nearby there was an elementary school, and I know they were having a party, and to hear our cheers erupt with their cheers. And no matter what you think or feel, everyone was focused on that eclipse and just kind of the awe we all felt. Now, Zaria, I know you spoke with Rachita Singh. She referenced the meaning of the eclipse in her culture. I'd love to hear that clip.
Yeah, people also say, like, my mom was like, we have like different beliefs in India. Like, if you're a pregnant woman, then you're not supposed to like be outside when there's an eclipse, and not really eat during like the eclipse hours and things like that. I'm not following any of that. So I hope nothing happens. I'm not expecting anything to happen, but it's just interesting, like, the kind of things our parents have been telling us about, especially.
That's so interesting. Yeah. You know, the different cultures' interpretations and references.
Yeah, and I just thought that was so funny. Like, I definitely have that experience. Like, my mom or my grandma or my nana telling me, like, oh, this is like, you know, you don't want to do this when you're pregnant. And I'm just taking that in now, you know what I'm saying, for the future. But I can imagine sort of like the level of concern of like going against your like cultural beliefs or like your family's beliefs. She was there with her husband and her daughter, and she's pregnant with another daughter now. And they said, like, we've done our own research. Like, we expect everything to be fine. And I couldn't blame them because this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And then to be able to experience it with your baby daughter while you're pregnant with another, like, that's very special. So,
and maybe it's good luck.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, it might start something new, a new cultural belief maybe, or maybe a family belief
exactly.
For them.
And Abigail, you spoke with Nicole Cross from Pennsylvania, who chose Ohio as her destination to view the eclipse because of the weather. But this wasn't her first total solar eclipse.
No. So I loved her story. She actually said that she, with her begrudging family, drugged them to Wyoming in 2017 for their family vacation because that was in the path of totality. And, you know, everyone was kind of like, why are we in Wyoming? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until they like went on this hike to get the best view of where the eclipse would be. And then that amazing moment of totality that we've talked about, that her family was like, oh, this was amazing. Like, thank you for taking us. And so she, I think, took a less begrudging husband and her two dogs from Philadelphia to Akron to see it. And I think we have a clip of her talking about what this means to see it twice in her lifetime.
I mean, I'm 60. This is the last one in my lifetime in North America. So I would have to travel to another continent to see a total solar eclipse.
And we did actually catch up with her after, too, and she was just in awe and said it was totally worth the drive from Philadelphia, totally worth, you know, taking her family to Wyoming, to Ohio. She probably would do it again if it wasn't so long into the future. But, yeah, this was kind of a couple of people were eclipse chasers. So I talked to one man who had gone to Mexico. I think in the 90s there was an eclipse in Mexico, and he went to that one. He was kind of comparing the eclipse, like, based on how long the totality was. He said that one was really cool because the totality was, like, 7 minutes. And I think this was only 3 minutes.
Three or four?
Yeah, so he had seen, like, three total eclipses at this point, which was really cool. So, like, just a lot of really cool stories like that of people experiencing this.
Well, and I think there was a bit of amusement when you heard about eclipse chasers and people who travel to there. But now I'm already hearing from Drew Mazias, one of our producers, was saying, oh, maybe I'll go to Spain for their total eclipse. A friend of mine texted, and we've got another friend in Australia, and she said, in 4 years, is this the time we finally go to Australia and visit? So to already want to go to a place and then have this extra... Mm-hmm. amazing thing happen. Yeah. I don't know. Well, I think it's a definite driver.
Yeah.
Let's take another call. This is Matthew in Ohio City. Matthew, tell us about your eclipse experience.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I actually have a similar experience to the story you're just talking about. This was my second total solar eclipse. I drove down with two of my friends from college to see the one in 2017, and we watched it in Kentucky. And I was just in total awe both times. I think it looks like something out of a science fiction movie. You look up at it, and it's almost like you don't believe that you could possibly be seeing this in real life. It's just so surreal. My two friends from college who I watched with in 2017 came to Cleveland and stayed with me for this year.
How fun.
My in-laws came up from North Carolina, and there were 12 of us total in our backyard, and we have a view of the downtown Cleveland skyline, so it was totally wild to see the Terminal Tower light up and the Key Tower at 3:15 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I'm going to become an eclipse chaser, I think. We're already talking about going to Spain or Iceland in 2026.
Great.
So it was a
You'll
special
see Drew
day
there.
And a special weekend.
That is awesome. Yeah, I love that you were able to get all those people together. And it's fun to hear the stories of people's relatives coming in and friends coming in and kind of making a party of it. Thanks for calling in, Matthew. I want to read an email from Tom who said, what struck me was the thought that ancient prehistoric people, when encountering an eclipse, would likely have lost their minds looking up and seeing something they have never seen in their lives before. an angry sun, a foreboding sign, absolute power staring back at them. Surely it affected entire cultures, practices, and myths of our ancestors for millennia. Truly a powerful experience, even for we science-minded people. Yeah, we have data. We have scientists and people to explain this all. But truly, if you were just looking at it and trying to create some sort of rationality, that must have been incredible.
Yeah, I saw this tweet that showed the crescent shapes through like pinholes on leaves and trees. And it was just like crazy little crescents all over the ground. And I'm like, imagine seeing that before you had scientists to explain anything. Like it was probably so crazy. Like, I couldn't imagine.
I was going to say, because like if you didn't have like our little solar eclipse glasses, you couldn't see the moon solely eclipsing the sun. So it would just totally randomly happen, because hopefully people like, you know, through experience would know not to look stare into the sun and sear their eyes. So then just like we were kind of anticipating it, even if you didn't know exactly what was going on, but that would just randomly happen in the middle of your day.
Yeah.
That's
of
so
course,
crazy.
I was wondering, I'm like, did our ancestors get tons of retinal damage because no one was there to warn them not to stare into
that would give like angry sun vibes.
Or did our better impulses and better instinct like feelings know not to stare at the sun?
Right.
So one of you spoke with someone, I think it was Abigail, you spoke with someone, this is interesting, who had PTSD. So tell me more about her and her experience.
Yeah, this was my favorite. I spoke with her right after the eclipse happened. Her name is Debbie Lawson, and she's actually a veteran. And she said the past couple weeks, she's really been struggling with PTSD. She said she's disabled, and so she's having a hard time. And she told me she remembered learning about eclipses in the 70s, because there was an eclipse then in elementary school for her. And she remembered her teacher saying, oh, there will be an eclipse in 2024, and it'll come through Ohio, and we could see it. And so she kind of just held this memory in the back of her mind, and she hadn't planned to come. She lives in Marietta, which is outside the path of totality, so she hadn't planned to come. And then on Sunday, she was telling her friend about this memory she had of grade school, and her friend was like, we're going tomorrow, get in the car, if you're not I'm gonna drag you if we're going. And so they got in the car yesterday and they drove out, and they barely made it, like it was kind of a rush to get there. And she just said it was just such a beautiful, joyful moment for her that she really needed during kind of a difficult time in her life.
Right.
And it was just a really beautiful moment to remember to be spontaneous, to connect with nature. She's a big park goer, so she loved spending the day at the state park we were at, and just her like message was to travel and be spontaneous and do the thing and have fun. And it just really touched me how much this impacted her in kind of a difficult period that she's been having.
Yeah, that's really touching.
Yeah.
I got another email that I have to read. Dear Sound of Ideas, I'm so glad you're covering this good news story rather than plunging back into the troubling news we face so much of the time. John from Coventry Township. You know, we love good news around here.
Yeah.
And it is fun to take a moment and just reflect on something exciting that happened for all of us.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you both coming in. I know you've got some, Abigail, you're going to spend the day reporting on some more, I guess. I don't know if it's bad news or good news, but it's
you know, more complex news. Most news isn't cut and dry like this. Like this was joyful. We all had a great day. Nothing terrible happened. But most news is, even when it's good news, it's more complicated than that. So
well, thank you for your good reporting on our complex issues to both of you, and for being here for the fun times as well.
Of course.
Abigail Botar, our Akron Canton reporter, and Zaria Johnson, our environmental reporter. Thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you for having us.
We'll take a short break now, and when we return, a look at four local nonprofits who received grants from philanthropist Mackenzie Scott's organization, Yield Giving. This is The Sound of Ideas. I'm Jenny Hamill. We'll be right back. You're with The Sound of Ideas from IdeaStream Public Media. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks so much for being with us this hour. Seven Ohio nonprofit organizations are among those nationwide to receive funds from author and philanthropist Mackenzie Scott's organization, Yield Giving. Scott is Amazon founder Jeff Bezos' ex-wife and remains a part owner of the company. These grants totaled $640 million nationwide and will be allocated among 361 organizations, which were chosen from a pool of 6,000 applicants. We've invited four of the local nonprofits in the Cleveland and Akron area that were on the list to learn more about the work that they do for the communities they serve and how the funding is going to help further impact their work. Joining me in studio is Adora Schmiedel, the Chief Advancement and Community Engagement Officer at Towards Employment in Cleveland, which focuses on workforce development at the local level. She's in studio with us this morning. Thanks, Adora, for being here.
So excited to be here.
Great. We also have Gulnar Farasta. She is the Managing Director at the LGBT Community Center of Greater Cleveland, which provides various programs and services to LGBTQ plus people in our area. Gulnar, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Of course. Also joining us by phone is Jasmine Long, the President and CEO of Birthing Beautiful Communities, which provides services to expectant mothers in Akron and Cleveland who are at high risk of infant death. Jasmine, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, everyone.
And then finally, we have Geraldine Manson. She is the Program Manager of the Workforce Development at Fairfax Renaissance Development Corporation. Fairfax is a community development corporation based in Cleveland with a footprint across Northeast Ohio. Good morning, Geraldine.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 866-578-0903. Once again, 866-578-0903. You can email us at soi@ideastream.org, or you can tweet us. We're at Sound of Ideas. All right, Gulnar, the LGBT Community Center mission has some areas that are key to your work in the community. Why don't you tell us about some of the big issues that your center is tackling currently?
Right. So the mission of the center is to educate, advocate, support, and celebrate the LGBTQ plus community of Greater Cleveland and, in many cases, Northeast Ohio. Some of the things that we are currently focused on is the spate of anti-LGBTQ plus legislation that has been increasingly more visible at the State House, the different laws, most recently HB 68, which bans affirming care for transgender and gender diverse minors. You know, all of that toxicity in the socio-political landscape is really impacting our community. At the same time, we're seeing increasing needs around food insecurity, housing insecurity, you know, basic needs, transportation, employment, access to care. So those are all areas in which we are focused on not just creating, trying to find ways to create equitable access, but also doing a lot of advocacy work, a lot of training, because if organizations are here to serve all Northeast Ohioans, we are part of that all. And so really wanting to focus on, you know, ensuring that Cleveland remains a welcoming place for all people.
So you're working on issues locally, but then again, you know, if the epicenter of what you think is not LGBTQ plus supportive legislation in Columbus, that's where you'll focus your efforts.
It's both. So, yeah. You know, that legislation definitely has an impact across the
sure,
state. And so, of course, locally. But, you know, here in Cleveland, we continue to be focused on providing programs and services for youth, for LGBTQ plus older adults, trans and gender expansive individuals, and our community at large.
Geraldine Mason, I misspoke when I said your last name. Apologies for that. Tell me about the work that Fairfax Renaissance Development Corporation is involved in. And if you were to say there was a top issue that's really a priority for the group, what is that?
Okay, FRDC, we are a community development corporation that works in the city of Cleveland in the Fairfax neighborhood. And one of the things we work with is affordable housing and community revitalization and economic development. So those would be the main topics that we would be looking at as well. We do a lot of housing programs. We have workforce development. We also have a home maintenance program and small business development as well.
So you're really focused on the community as a whole. How are you getting residents access to housing? How are you getting them jobs? Is that really kind of what the organization is doing, is trying to uplift the community from different aspects? Yes. Different angles?
Yes, very much so. We have programs that help people find housing so people can apply. We actually own units in the neighborhood. Mm. With workforce development, we partner with Cleveland Clinic. We help people connect with Cleveland Clinic to get hired for employment. So those are just one of the two things that we do in the Fairfax community. We're very much vested in the community.
And Jasmine, the president and CEO of Birthing Beautiful Communities, tell me about your work helping expectant mothers in Akron and Cleveland, and where are we currently with kind of the status of maybe moms who are needing help, who are expecting children, and probably from lower socioeconomic levels?
Hi, yes, good morning. Thank you so much for having me. As you stated, Birthing Beautiful Communities serves clients across Summit County and Cuyahoga County. And I actually just want to say that, you know, with respect to infant mortality and maternal mortality and morbidity, African American women, regardless of socioeconomic status, face hardships in this area. And so we have been working diligently to ensure that moms and babies are able to make it past that first year of life. We serve about 1,000 families across the two regions, and we have a 99% infant survival rate and 100% maternal mortality, survival rate. And so we are doulas, which means that we are labor and delivery support coaches. We're the only, I like to call ourselves, infant vitality agency that actually attends the labor and delivery for the clients that we're serving. So we're able to be in the room, to be an advocate, and to help the birthing person that we're working with really establish whatever they need for their birth, to support their partner, to support their family, and whoever else may be attending that birth. In Cuyahoga and Summit counties, we've had tremendously horrible infant mortality for decades. Mm-hmm. And so we are working in community, in collaboration with other partners, to really try to make a dent on that number. And we have been able to do that by elevating the profile of what doulas do, being able to show the efficacy of our work, and being able to gain trust in partnership with all of the healthcare systems across the two counties. So we work very diligently to ensure that we're able to touch the lives of any family that is in Cuyahoga and Summit County, and sometimes even beyond.
And Jasmine, why is having a doula as part of the process? How have you learned that that is so effective? What are the types of things that you are doing that you think actually addresses infant mortality?
Thank you so much for that question. As doulas, we are really there to be the advocate for the birthing person. I oftentimes give the example of, like, how many times have maybe we gone to the doctor's appointment and we had a burning question, but we were afraid to ask? You know, sometimes we get so scared to ask questions about our bodies, and doulas are there to ensure that clients are able to ask the question. It doesn't matter from, you know, what you do for a living. Everyone sometimes gets afraid. And so we're there to make sure that you're prepping yourself. You're asking the questions that you have, you know, you need answers to. We're also in that labor and delivery room to make sure that if you want to have a natural birth, that we're supporting you through that, that we're teaching you the techniques to do that. If you have to have an emergency C-section, we're there to support you through that as well. And then we're there to support you once you take baby home. We saw during the pandemic a lot of behavioral health challenges, and so our agency also supports the behavioral health of our postpartum moms to ensure that they have what they need, that they're recognizing the sign of baby blues, and that their families are also able to wrap support around them. So again, we provide full cells. Gona was saying we have we see a lot of social determinants of health for our clients, of course. So we provide rental assistance, we provide food stipends for when they have the baby and they come home, because again, just taking a little bit of the load off of moms is so important, no matter, again, socioeconomic status, to ensure that they're able to not only survive, but to thrive as well.
Now let's go to Adora. So your work at Towards Employment in Cleveland, you really focus on social determinants that affect people's abilities to enter the workforce. So tell me more about the work that you're doing and what you think the big issues are through that lens.
So we spent last year re-envisioning our mission, because during the pandemic, we really felt that the way people engage with work is changing. And our mission changed, and we see ourselves as championing the potential of every person to succeed in a rewarding career, not a job, but a career. And that's the work we do today. And then we continue to work towards creating an equitable and inclusive workforce for tomorrow. So we know that we're doing work today and tomorrow to build an inclusive and equitable, and that's important, workplace. And how do we do it? Because there are many workforce organizations. We use a model, a tested model, that is called Work Advance, and that's our solution. And that connects people to a career pathway. It's a model that's been tested, and we know that it helps people both make more and advance, not just in our market, but other markets. And when we connect people to careers, the things that we care about, there's four of them. And they are, as you talked about, addressing the social determinants of work. There are eight of them. Many of the folks we just spoke to talked about them. Their health, their access to transportation, involvement with the criminal justice system. I could go on. We want to always think about skill building. Are we building skill sets for in-demand and opportunity jobs, jobs that pay more, not just entry-level jobs? And then also, we're providing direct connections to employers. We work with over 300 employers.
And it runs the gamut. What kinds of companies?
The gamut. Exactly,
and because the training and skills that the employee potential employee needs.
Right. And then the thing that many times we forget, but we consider very important, and will probably drive our use of the funds, is career coaching. You have to, and I think we heard previously around birthing, you have to build a relationship with someone. It's the same thing with employment. If you have been sort of minimized by the system and not listened to, if you're going to advance and build wealth, you need someone in your corner. And I think towards employment, as far as employment is concerned, we want to be that person in your corner.
How many individuals do you think you helped? Is there a way to quantify the work that you've been successful with?
Yeah, and I love that you asked that in that way, because it is hard to quantify.
Right.
So we struggle with that. We know that every year about 1,800 people connect with us somewhere along their career pathway, whether they're starting a job, whether they want to advance, whether they may need something to tackle the social determinants of health. Maybe they need financial coaching. So 1,800 people, but every year about 450 to 500 people get connected to new jobs.
Through your organization?
Through our organization. And about we offer about 1,700 services a year that are connected to the social determinants of work. So we can sort of parse it in many different ways to show how we're partnering with people to make a difference.
Great. And we're going to talk to someone who has received help through Towards Employment in a second. But I just want to remind our listeners that we are currently talking with four local nonprofits who received pretty sizable grants and funds from author and philanthropist Mackenzie Scott, her organization Yield Giving. Now, Scott, if we don't know, is Amazon founder Jeff Bezos's ex-wife. She remains a part owner of the company and has been allocating funds all around this country in the tunes of billions of dollars. And this round of grants totaled $640 million allocated among 361 organizations, were chosen from a pool of 6,000. I'm talking to Adora Schmiedel with Towards Employment in Cleveland, Gulnar Farasta with the LGBT Community Center of Greater Cleveland, Jasmine Long with Birthing Beautiful Communities, and Geralyn Mason, who is with the Fairfax Renaissance Development Corporation. I want to invite Ronnie, who's called in, to talk about your experience when it comes to getting a job with Towards Employment.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Again, Ronnie Cannon, Senior Manager of Community Engagement at Towards Employment. And just listening to this conversation warms my heart that there's a cross-section of connections between all the organizations that's on the call today, from community to dealing with people, the resources that they need, from a number of different standpoints and everything. And I've been connected with Towards Employment for the better part of 11 years. I used the program myself after returning home from prison. It really helped me to, one, establish myself in the community, both from personal standpoint and professional standpoint. Allowed me to help, you know, grow my family. And the great thing that I really like about Tours Employment is they stay with you for the long term. Even on the back end, they just formulated what's known as like the Alumni Advancement Collective. And it really allows for those that came through the program to continue on today their career pathway beyond just getting a job, as Dora mentioned, or even a career, so they can become more active in their community and really trying to address some of those social determinants of work, like, because some of the stuff are systemic issues. And it's like, how do you go about addressing that? And it's more like, hey, how do you grow your voice? How do you become a leader in your community? How do you get connected to your community? And those are things that Tours Employment has done far beyond just helping a person to gain employment.
So, Ronnie, it seems like Tours Employment, you know, was life-changing for you. Can you bring us back to the time when you were kind of seeking employment and what the circumstances were and how you were helped?
Yes, absolutely. So I was it was actually my first opportunity, never having a job before outside of just summer jobs. And you know, I saw it fit. Someone had told me about the program, and I was like, hey, you know, it's worth, you know, giving it a try. And just going through the program, oftentimes when people come to the program, they feel like they, well, I've been there, done that. I know how to interview. I know how to do a resume. And it's those certain nuances that can be tipping points to, you know, actually help you to get a job or help you not to get a job and everything. So just having an opportunity to kind of like learn some new innovative ways, and they're always on the scene to be on the cusp of what employers are looking for, because as Adora mentioned, they work with well over 300 employers, and from my understanding, it's not just about helping the client or the participant to gain employment, but it's also that a lot of work is being done changing the mindset for employers. One thing that I know that Tours Employment has done in the past was they go to employers, and it was a situation about bus transportation and people showing up late for work. Well, the hours that the shifts were being doled out didn't align with the way that public transportation. So having a conversation like that with employers is something that also takes place at Tours Employment. That's, you know, really supportive from that standpoint as well.
Well, Ronnie, I appreciate you calling in and telling us about your connection and work with Tours Employment. Thanks for calling in this morning.
Thank you.
Jerry, I want to ask, when it comes to Fairfax Renaissance Development Corporation and the work that you do, how did you all find out about the opportunity to potentially get funding from Yield Giving?
The opportunity was worked on by our executive director, Denise Van Leer, and two other employees. So they had found out about the grant opportunity, and they worked on the grant, and they submitted it. And we had just recently had a ribbon cutting at the Aura at Innovation Square, which is a new apartment building in Fairfax, and that's where the good news was announced, because staff didn't even know that we had been awarded the grant. So Ms. Van Leer and a couple of staff members worked on that grant.
And when you found out that you received it, I mean, it must have been pretty exciting, because it's a hefty amount.
It was really exciting. We had the ribbon cutting for the Aura, and Ms. Van Leer just decided she said we have some really good news we want to share with everyone, and she told us, we didn't even know, I didn't know, and we were amazed. So we've been getting congratulations and calls, and I run into people out in the community that congratulate me on our grant. So it was a group effort. That's something Ms. Van Leer spearheaded.
And do you have a specific project or goal that you might allocate this money to? Was that a part of the process?
Yes. The funds are going to be used to support programs for low-income homeowners who need exterior repairs, and this will allow them to remain in their homes. It's also going to assist in completing capital repairs for affordable housing developments, and also our building at Quincy Place, we're going to have some capital repairs made there. And in our building, we are co-located with Cuyahoga County Job and Family Services, and there's also a daycare in our building run by Catholic Charities. We're also going to have use some of the funds for an outdoor exercise station that's going to be open to all residents of Fairfax, and that's going to help improve the social determinants of health.
Gulnar, I know that for the LGBT Community Center of Greater Cleveland, you know, there's LGBT centers all over the country. So to hear about a organization that has national scope being able to weed through 6,000 applicants and say, hey, here's 361 organizations, and one of them is going to be the LGBTQ Center of Greater Cleveland. How were you positioning the work that you do and the needs that you have? Do you think that was compelling enough to Mackenzie Scott's organization?
I would say that I think that the trajectory of the center over the last 10 to 12 years, especially under the leadership of Phyllis Harris, has been phenomenal. We went from the basement to a purpose-built building. We've had increased expansion and strengthening of our programs, expanded our reach. You know, what I really appreciated about the application process was how intentional it was about centering equity and diversity. And, you know, one of the core principles of the center and in the way that we do this work is that we are who we serve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just within our staff and our board, you know, 84% of us have experienced discrimination specifically because of who we are. 55% have experienced poverty, 44% have experienced food insecurity. So we really are who we serve in the community, and we always come at it from that lens. We are a Black and Brown-led organization, and we are doing phenomenal work. When you think about Northeast Ohio, you know, you have Columbus that has an LGBT center, and then in Northeast Ohio, we are the only center that's brick and mortar, that is a community center that is serving the needs of not just the LGBTQ plus community in Cleveland, but also the greater Cleveland surrounding area. And we have been really intentional about wanting to collaborate and partner with our community and grassroots organizations in our neighboring counties to help build that capacity across the region, because the more centers we have, the better we are, right? Often at times, every neighborhood has a community center, a rec center, a youth center, a senior center. But in all of Cleveland, we have one LGBT community center. And so the needs are significant. The potential for impact is significant. I think that, you know, I think, yes, we positioned ourselves well. You know, we just completed our strategic planning process at the end of 2023. We were in year one of a 3 to 5 year strategic plan. And so, you know, this grant, one of the things we talked about was supporting the execution of this plan and building capacity. We're coming up on our 50 years anniversary next year. And so for us, it's really thinking about how are we going to be intentional, thoughtful stewards of this incredible resource that set us up to be successful and sustainable for the next 50 years. And so I think that in terms of the center, our work and impact speaks for itself. And it's a huge, I take it as a huge endorsement of our work and the way in which we do our work to have an impact on our community.
I think endorsement is a great word, because it is kind of, when I first heard about the, I said, how would she know about these four organizations? Because we as locals know of the work that you're doing, but it, you know, each, it's kind of niche, each one and unique. I mean, the network of you is doing the work for the entire community. But I want to ask Jasmine, what is Birthing Beautiful Communities doing with your source of funding?
Yeah, so like everyone else, we were so excited to get these dollars, and then to go from expecting $1 million to get $2 million. We're in the midst of a $15 million capital campaign building what is going to be Northeast Ohio's only freestanding birth center. And we're thinking, like Gulnar said, about long-term sustainability. So BBC is a newer agency in our community, and so we want to use these funds to halfway support our endowment so that we're able to draw down on those dollars every year and really sustain ourselves. And then we want to use half of it to support our operations so that we can continue to serve even more moms and families. When folks ask me about our capacity to serve, it really just stems down to how much money and how many resources do we have to pay the doulas to serve the clients. So we are going to expand our services to be able to support more moms and families. And we're going to also support our endowment so that we're here for 10, 15, 20, 50 years, like Golner was talking about with the LGBTQ Center.
Adora, we have a minute left. So why don't you tell me about how you're going to spend this money?
It's appropriate that I'm last because we are still thinking about it. Our CEO, Jill Rizica, has established our organization as a very collaborative place. When we created our mission statement last year, it was something that participants, graduates, staff, and board participated in. So we sort of have a process in place. But we know that we want to think about a long-term investment in the organization, something that goes on even into the next 50 years. We want to think about some midterm projects where maybe staff and participants can pitch things, but we're thinking about how we provide structure to determine feasibility for those short-term projects. And then we're going to do some things short-term that make work better for our own staff and for the people we serve. So April, our staff is meeting to talk about this and identify some ideas. Then the board's meeting in May. And then hopefully maybe I can come back in June and talk to you about what this participatory process has created.
Sounds good. We're here when you're ready. Adora Schmiedel, Chief Advancement and Community Engagement Officer with Towards Employment. Jerry Mason with the Fairfax Renaissance Development Corporation, Jasmine Long, president of the Birthing Beautifuls Community and Birthing Beautiful Communities, and Gulnar Firasta with the LGBT Community Center of Greater Cleveland. I appreciate the four of you joining me this morning and telling me about your good news.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thanks for the work that you're doing. Now, to get the last word on today's topic, send an email to SOI at ideastream.org. We're on Twitter, now X, at Sound of Ideas. And you can follow me at JennyHamill_ or on Instagram, JennyHamillIdeaStream. I want to read an email we got from John regarding the eclipse. He was in Chagrin Falls and said, I enjoyed seeing the ruby red Bailey's beads at the bottom perimeter of the corona before the diamond ring effect occurred after totality. Truly was a rare event worth witnessing. Now, tomorrow on The Sound of Ideas, the Ohio Chamber of Commerce has recently raised concern about the state of Ohio's child care options. We'll talk to the chamber's president and CEO and local child care experts about why a lack of affordable and accessible options is impacting our workforce locally and in the state. If you missed any portion of the program, find us online or listen to The Sound of Ideas podcast. I'm Jenny Hamill. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll speak with you again tomorrow.
The Sound of Ideas is produced by Rachel Rood, Lee Barr, Drew Mazias, and Jay Shaw. Chris Dudley and Samson Albel provide technical assistance. Jay Nungesser is at the controls of the Ohio Channel broadcast, and our host is Jenny Hamill. Thanks for tuning in.